because our spirits are rejecting something. Without conflict is supposed to be spiritual maturity. You know, and you hear that book, that baby blue book. You know, get one for me, Ken. Make sure it's blue. I mean, there's all different color ones over there. Okay. See the color of this here? This is what Jeff was talking about. Except they had a brown one in Miami at that point in time also. But they're talking about a book causing controversy. Look, did it cause any controversy in your hand there?
No.
Seriously, I mean, the book itself, did it cause controversy? But yet there was so much controversy and conflict within the fellowship. I think there's some of that conflict going on today in the fellowship, which will be talked about in the next session. But I want to lead up how you get to the point where something like that can be blamed for controversy. Jeff, I think, explained it pretty well when he talked about one little area having five participating members on the World Service Conference floor outside the RSR and RSR alternate. The people that were involved were that in depth from one area. Lack of accepting causes conflict. But this conflict, if you're listening to the people speak today, they're talking about conflict. First, they're talking about a period of time when he wrote a book that was beautiful, it was in harmony. There was a spirituality. You're talking about growth of a fellowship. You're talking about a convention being in Miami Beach, Florida, which was at the Marco Polo Hotel. You're talking about a literature conference happening in Miami Beach, Florida. You're talking about unity. You're talking about an explosion of a fellowship tripling its size in a matter of a year's time, short period of time. It tripled its size. You're talking about people that cared. You're talking about a different fellowship than we know today. That's something that people got to remember. When we're talking about people caring and loving and helping one another back to life, is what happened back then. When I got clean in 1979, there was another fellowship that we walked into. And that fellowship had one little white book and five pamphlets, IPs, and had another book in our room from another fellowship. And we changed the words in it. People have to understand that we changed the word, and this fellowship did not always have a basic text. They had another fellowship's book. And people said, and the book started to get written, and people started saying, you cannot change our book. Well, we weren't changing their book. We were writing our own. But there was a conflict from other people that were in the fellowship that we were in, from another fellowship that were angry at us. I mean, that's a growing time frame where there's conflict as we were forming away from and creating ourselves and our own identity, which Jim likes to talk about, our philosophy being developed at that point of time. Our philosophy was not that before 1979. Our philosophy was from another fellowship. And that's why NA was small throughout the world. But as we start to develop literature and we start to develop a philosophy, a fellowship start to form. We may have been here from 1953. They might be going to say they're celebrating 60 years of Narcotics Anonymous existence. But the philosophy has basically been developed from 1978, wherever Bo got involved, to 1982. 83 is when they gave us our book, but it's not when it was approved. It took them a year to give us our book. A lot of people don't realize, the minute the book got approved, there started to have conflict within the fellowship already. And it was for control over a book. They changed our book. And that's why Jim talks about the second edition, when he did that power presentation, and he says, this is our real only approved basic text of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to go through that there, and the reason I go through that there is setting the stage up for a court case. You have to go over the things that laid that court case out. I mean, the member was sued, yes. But there was a whole network of issues that happened. From the time we approved the basic text, they changed it. They changed our original Fourth and Ninth tradition without a group conscience. Four men made that decision. They did talk with trustee members on it, and a lot of trustee members backed them up on that decision process. And then, them four men made a decision. Two of the men went to the fellowship and sent this out to the fellowship saying it was made, these changes were made. And, there was controversy, there was conflict, there's damage done. And that's what Jeff was talking about, damage today. People getting hurt on the way. He talked about some ugly stuff today that happened. But it was the reading process. It didn't start when Lou's car ended up in the drink. This started way before that. And when people wrote a book, you write a book, would you like someone to change it on you? You made a conscience. The groups made a conscience. This is what we want. Would you like someone changing it? Four people making a decision for a whole fellowship of every addict in it, say, we want this changed. And Jim showed you what was taken out of it today. He showed you exactly what was removed. And what was removed was the fellowship having control of the service structure. That's what was removed. All else is not NA. Your service structure is not Narcotics Anonymous. Your service structure cannot live by the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. And they realized that, and they gave you the concepts. And why? Because the service structure is the ninth tradition. It's the ninth tradition. They cannot do the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. And they can't do the eighth. The eighth allows us to hire somebody to do a service for us. Real simple. Anyone ever go to Kinko to get a flyer print? Ever involved in an area and you get a helpline service? Guess what them services do not do? They do not mandate. They do not tell you what to do. They do a job, you pay them, and it's over. They're not involved in your service structure. They're not making decisions in their service structure to continue that service for you. They don't make money continuously off your service structure. They can be hired, they can be fired. And that's what people need to understand about Rural Service Office Incorporated, which is called NAWS Incorporated. They are a service center. But yet they have a control of your service structure. Yet they're making decisions for your service structure. You're employing them. But you don't pay them. But you do pay them. Here's where groups get confused. Got a newcomer tax. It wasn't explained too well today. A newcomer tax. What's the first thing you're trying to sell your newcomer when they walk through the doors? Basic touch. What else? How many books you got now? Well, the group gives them a white key tag. They might give them a little white book or a couple little, but they got a book. I don't know what it costs today. When I came in, it was $8. Now it's $12. Okay? It went up $4 in price, but yet it's being printed in China cheaply. All right? And because they're negotiating deals for the best possible way they can make more money. That's what corporations do. They make more money any possible way. However, they're not concerned about the fund flow. They already got the fund flow. It's called the newcomer tax. Every book you sell to a newcomer, that money goes directly to NAWS Incorporated. Doesn't go to support your services in your local area. It goes directly and supervents the service structure. And this is laying groundwork for the court case and why I'm talking about this stuff. Because that book, back then, we could print it for 68 cents a dollar for shipping. That's what we could print that baby blue for. But when they changed the fourth and ninth, the fellowship demanded it be put back, it was put back in. And I just had this told me this weekend again. Well, a group went to the board of directors, and I'm talking, I mean, this girl was just, could I ask her how much queen time you have? Who has less than 6 months in this room? How long are you clean?
5 days.
Congratulations, you're a miracle. How long are you clean?
5 months.
Congratulations, you're a miracle. Are you offended by me asking you? How long are you clean? Lester, Take that book and hand it to the guy with 5 days there, okay, please, and give him a hug. We have another one for her, too, okay?
6 days.
Hey, Lester, go get the Bind It blue book in the back there. Okay, the Bind It one in the back. The spiral on it. Yeah, and give that to her over there so she has a book, okay? All right? 6 days over there. I suggest that you read the book. It's a subtle command, okay? We're going to tell you. We only suggest. It's a suggestion to the subtle command. I give a direction to my sponsees to write it. They got a blueprint. They choose to follow it or not. There's consequences for every action we do. There's a good consequence for reading the book. Why I'm giving you a book is because that's what someone did for me, and it may not have been a literature at that point. It was a hug. They love me in this fellowship. When I do that prayer and I have you hug each other, I'm feeling your hugs. I'm feeling your spirit. That's what this program is about, is spirituality. That book was about giving and getting it back out there, but it was putting back into print what we felt the conference changed on us. What they changed on us. We didn't accept that they're going to make changes without coming back to you. We feel a conference should have came back to every group and took a conscience. And you heard some things that Jim shared some things in the book and stuff today. And I'm not talking about how we wrote the book, because that was the greatest thing in the world, the biggest miracle in the world. That's where illness comes. Don't leave before the miracle happens. You fought for that seat. Keep it. Don't give it up. You know, but as that book, when it changed everyone, it took a piece of a spirit out. Shares in that basic text, we shouldn't say anything that would send another person out there. There's accountability in us. Things that are talked about, when a man dies out in San Diego with a needle in his arm, there's two things you can think about that he wanted to use. There's another thing you can think that the fellowship, the service structure, drove him away from us. I choose to say we drove a man away from us, and he didn't have a strong enough recovery program at that point. After his car was in the drink, after he was at a world convention from a podium and a speaker, who's someone praising here today, named Bob Berg, and Bob Berg pointed him out amongst everyone in that room and attacked him and called him a scumbag for giving out a book like that. They're giving something freely to somebody else. Someone said here that he bankrolled a lot of that, and he did. He had the money, and he spent it freely to help addicts. Lou is the type of man, I want to tell you about Big Lou. Anyone down here know where mile marker 88's at? What's at mile marker 88? A restaurant. Used to be a restaurant there. Used to be a restaurant there that we used to go to years ago. Big Lou had about 25 people there. All right? Big Lou didn't let one of us buy our meal. The first time I ate fish in my life. See, I don't eat fish, but I ate a dolphin fish that day. I told him I wanted steak. He said, well, how are you going to get steak in a fish food place? I said, they'll make me a steak. Who's their chef? Where's their chef from? Oh, he's from New York. Well, he knows how to make a steak. All right? Big Lou wouldn't allow us to pay for that. And he said, afterward, we're going to have baked Alaskan. And he paid for everyone's meal. The type of man Big Lou was. He had a heart of gold. But he got involved with us, and he started the same way Jeff did. Jeff was a counter at the World Service Conference where I met him. Just to count the votes. Puppy, before that, was a vote counter. And then Big Lou took over for them and became the vote counter. See, that's when we're talking about Florida region being that strong back then. They got their people to go to the conference with them. They indoctrinate them into service. But service itself can be a beautiful thing, or it can be a thing that causes a lot of damage. And why do I say that? Strong personalities can cause a lot of damage. Not a book, but strong personalities can cause damage. Acceptance and lack of acceptance. But as they changed things in the book, they changed things, they changed the 4th and 9th, and they put it back in, and then they changed it by a group, they said. A group from Nebraska sent it to the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees puts it on the conference floor. And there's no process in the conference. I don't know how they do it today, but back then you had to have it, you had to have it sent in so many by a certain date before, and I forget what the date was, but they had to have this, they had to have the agenda report out by, I think, February 1st back then. Okay, so you had to have it in, what was it, 30 days or 90 days before? 90 days before that, so you're backing it up January to the beginning of November 1st to have everything in there. So we get our agenda reports. There's nothing in there about changing the 4th and 9th tradition again. We get there. There's no process to get it on the floor. They can be discussing on their new business, but it can't be voted on. And no group has a process to divert its area to start with, to go, without going to area first and putting a motion in, and then having it go through the region. That was the process. Well, they never went through an area in Nebraska, and they never went through a region in Nebraska, but shows on the conference board through the Board of Trustees, and they make a motion to change the process of how we do business. And that this is going to go out to the fellowship for 60 days after the conference and have to come back in. Well, most regions do not meet to at least 30 days after the conference to start with. They don't meet. Mid-Atlantic did not meet to the end of June that year. We met the third weekend. We had the conference in May that year. We did meet for about 45 days, and I was the RSR. I took over RSR when I come back. You know, the region said, we're not even going to deal with this. They didn't have a process. And I know another region. I know another area. I know other areas that sent letters in and said, we're not participating with this. This is out of order. But then the vote comes back, they said. And they had so many yeses and so many noes, but they didn't have no abstentions. Well, how can you not have an abstention when the Mid-Atlantic said we're not even voting? There's another region I know didn't vote. I know the Philadelphia area sent a letter in, and that was a strong area. That we're not participating in this. This is out of order. But they changed our book again and put their 4th and 9th back again. So now we got the third edition. So you want the first, the second, the third. And then there was a motion later about changing the Little White Book. The Board of Trustees and the Literature Committee changed the Little White Book, sent it back to the fellowship. The fellowship did vote on it. The vote was, there was a motion on the conference floor to split the Little White Book because there was controversy over the stories in the back. We can't touch the stories. It was that we need permission. So we split the vote that we wrote in the first part, just similar to the Green Manual, except different. This time it came from the conference floor to split it, not from them. And we split it because we wanted to change this to clean up our Little White Book. And then there was and listen to what I'm saying here because it's very important. There was a motion put on the floor, a house clearing motion, that all literature that reflected the change in the Little White Book would also be changed. So that means the basic text. All the italic stuff had to be changed from the Little White Book to the basic text. So you end up with a third edition revised. That's where you get your third edition revised. Then there's another motion later about changing the going into the basic text and doing a, supposed to be a simple edit on it. A simple edit. It was not supposed to be changing our book. Instead, it's given to a writer, as Jim was talking about. Now you get this book back, and it's a fourth edition. Never went back through to the groups or anything, or the groups would have caught it. So the groups would have caught this, but they did. They changed our basic text, and they changed spiritual meaning in it. And you can compare them. You can get a third edition revised off the web page Jim put. You can download the first edition, the approval form. You can compare differences. You had a second edition up there too, right, Jim?
Yes.
So you get the second edition, you get the third revised. We get the third revised with the original 4th and 9th in it, actually, so that's consistent. And then you have to find a 4th edition somewhere and compare it. All right? And you can compare it. Compare your 5th edition with it. Okay, you have a fifth edition, compare it. You can actually take the first book of the sixth edition and compare it with the third edition revised, with the original fourth and ninth in it, so you can see the original fourth and ninth. Compare it. I'm not going to tell you that you should take what I'm saying as factual. I'm going to tell you to compare it, to do your research. Research is important in what we do here. Really important. I don't have to live with you. I don't have to lay my head in your bed. You have to live with your conscience. You're the one that's going to develop it. You got to say what's right or wrong for you. I can't do that for you. But without me giving you any information and you fact-checking it, because you have people saying, oh, there's different perspectives. And it may be. However, I like looking through all the information. Everything I talk about is over there in a sense that I have documentation. I do not do anything without getting documentation. I do all the fact-checking myself of what I'm doing. And I'm prepared to talk about these things because it's so important to what's going on today when you get to that point in your next workshop. You have to understand how this court case happened. And then we went back to the conference, and the fellowship did not want the fourth edition. And then you're going to have a thing where you have an office manager, and his name is, he has no anonymity because he wasn't an addict. His name is Robert Stone. Bob Stone, he's known as. Got on the conference floor, and it's in them reports of the minutes where he lets us know we cannot go back to our fourth edition because Hazleton funded it. Hazleton, an outside organization, funded the fourth edition. They didn't have the money to go to print, so they got it from Hazleton. And it's important that you know who Hazleton is, what they are, because we're going through this process again. This time not to change it. Well, I'm going to say yes, probably to change our basic text again. And why? Because our minutes reflect that. And that's why the 85 motion, or 85 or 86, where that house cleaner motion was in, is important. Because they don't have to come back to you. They'll just go back and say there's a house cleaner motion. It's a way of doing things that we have today. We don't have to go back. It's past practice. You know, past practice in the law sets precedent. So you have to understand that precedent's already been set. For what I'm going to lead you and get to the court case and talk to you about factualizations and things like that, because it's very important to understand these things when you want to. People say, oh, history don't matter, I just got to be concerned about my home group. Well, you're going to have to be concerned more about your home group because the message is about to change. How many people believe in total abstinence in this room? I mean, for factual, you believe in total abstinence? You believe there's a drug we can do and be clean? Anyone believe in that? Okay, you beat Suboxone, it's clean. I want to know that because this is something that's important. It's important as you're staying clean and you're carrying the message of hope and promise of freedom in Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah.
Got a question.
Yeah, you can question me.
There's a lot of people in our fellowship that believe people taking DRT are clean and that we as a fellowship can't police that.
Let's just say something, okay?
Are you laughing with me or his?
I think they're laughing with you, okay, brother?
What's DRT?
DRT is drug replacement therapy. The drug replacement, we don't have an opinion on drug replacement therapy. Because we don't have drug replacement therapy. Hazleton Incorporation does today. I'm going to get back to the word Hazleton again. Because they have drug replacement therapy today. It started in November. Board of Trustee minutes reflect that. Okay? And they're saying we're outdated. And that's why I want to get you to the book, and we're going to get to the court case, but I'm going to jump ahead quick and go back. Because your sixth edition already has it in it. You sell the six editions? It's in the stories. The minutes tell me that. Their minutes tell me there's a story in there that talks about I'm cleaning on Suboxone in NA. And they're referencing that with Hazleton and the Times. Because they want to know about a bulletin 29 that talks about methadone and drug replacement, and the old that said it's not clean. This is our philosophy. Total abstinence from any mood-changing sub-mild chemical is what we consider cleanliness.
Bulletin 29.
And I said bulletin 29. It's already there. But that's our philosophy. Our philosophy is in our basic text. But it's not today in this exhibition. I said they didn't change the first book, but they changed the story. There's reasons the stories have to be changed. It's to reflect the whole new world philosophy in NA. It's to reflect countries like Sweden and Denmark that it's mandatory drug replacement, but it's coming to America. The federal government's involved in drug replacement. And that's in their minutes. It's not for me again. It's in their minutes talking about this. It's coming. Just like they changed our third edition revised to a fourth edition, and people didn't believe that the office would do something like that, and it had to be a mistake, and no one's that they're rotten would do something like that to us. We got to trust them. If I tell you to trust me, tell me where all this could have run it. You let a thief in your house, guess what? My sponsor told me this, why I used to bring newcomers in all the time. And I used to leave money lay around. And I called him up one day and he said, you know, $200 disappeared, Joe. And he says, well, what was that, Bill? What was laying there? He goes, well, you let him in, didn't you? You let the money lay in the open. Don't you have some responsibility in the money disappearing? And he was right. I shouldn't have tempted another human being because he's an addict and that's what he did in his life. I shouldn't have tempted newcomers with money. When I had a recording company, I had $800 disappear in my till. Newcomers took that $800. I shouldn't have had them at the register, should have I? But I showed trust. It's my responsibility that they took the money, though. It's my responsibility if I allow them to change our philosophy, as you're saying. A lot of the people in the fellowship believe, a lot of the people in the fellowship are a drug replacement. Could have been pumped out the rehabs left and right at us. We don't change our philosophy to fit the world. It tells you in the basic text we've been misdiagnosed many a times. You know what they used to do with addicts back in the 60s, 50s? Lobotomies, folks. Shock treatment. Lock us up in jail long term. Put us in a rubber room. Tell us we had mental issues. We're criminals. That's the way they treated us. And then we started Narcotics Anonymous, and we started to change things. We started to change things for the world, for the betterment, for us, for addicts to stay clean and carry a message of hope and promise of freedom. And we grew. But the political side and the spiritual side are in conflict constantly. And they will always be in conflict if you allow the politics to override the spirituality. This is a spiritual fellowship. It's in our writings. It's in our philosophy. And Jim is talking about what we developed through that period of time. We developed that. And there's been an attack on that ever since. And what is the reason for the changes? How many books are sold when they change the book again to the sixth edition? We'll go back to the other motion back in the 80s again. Same time we did the third edition revised. Somewhere in there, third edition, there's a motion in there. It's a house clear motion again. That the minute we change a piece of literature, in 6 months, it's not allowed to be used by your groups. In 6 months, it has to be removed and the groups have to replenish it. It's no longer approved Narcotics Anonymous literature. And that's what your conference did to you again, without a fellowship conscience. House clear motions are important. Study your information. Have the proper tools when you deal with these issues in your consciences, in your groups. Understand what you're really dealing with. We say trust, trust, trust. We want addicts to trust us. Right? We want you to trust us when you come in, don't you, with your life? You have 5 days clean. You should be able to trust us. You should be able to trust. You have 6 days clean. You should be able to trust us. You should be able to trust us. Her, she should trust that I'm not going to try to take her to bed tonight. Seriously. That we're not going to be vultures with her and prey on her vulnerabilities. But we got her best interests at heart. We have his best interests at heart. And we're going to care for this man, and we're going to help him learn about the steps and learn how to recover.
Amen.
That should be our only responsibility in Narcotics Anonymous that we should have to deal with.
Yeah.
And you build trust and faith, and then you get involved in service, and that's where the conflict comes in. Because now you got the conflict going on here. You have the conflict going on. You got changes going on, and people are getting upset about these changes. And then people get driven out of service. They say, where'd the older members go? Where'd they go to? Are they in your groups? Or they just disappear? I can tell you, two of my home group members disappeared. They got 30 years both today. They disappeared back in 89. They disappeared because of the conflict Jeff talked about. They got tired. They get tired of having to deal with it. That's right. I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all. They called me up and talked to me yet today. I saw one of them. I saw another one in a dentist office. He looked at me and he said, Billy, I had to leave NA to save my life. He said, but you saved my life and I really want to appreciate that. I never did another drug. I never had to go back to a mental institution. I got a wife and I got children today, but I could not stay in NA because I was afraid I was going to end up back in a mental institution where you found me. Because I had to save myself and my sanity. He said, if I'm coming back, he said, I want to know where your home group's at because that's the only home group I'm willing to participate in again. He said, but if I need help, I need your phone number. He said, could I trust you? He said, but I couldn't stay anymore because of that conflict. He said, when you guys got letters saying that you were no longer Narcotics Anonymous after the court case from the World Service Office, I couldn't stay. I was scared for my life. Do we have responsibility when that happens to people? Yes. But when Grateful Dave was sued, as we changed that board to the fifth, and Bob Stone got on that floor and said, oh, we got 25 lines we can put back in and call it the fifth edition, and the conference become a literature conference instead. Instead of listening for the fellowship who wanted their third edition revised, they didn't allow that motion on the floor because we're going to be sued. And all the service people, oh my God, we're going to be sued. We're going to be sued. But how about giving Hagerton their damn money back and keeping our book? That wasn't even a thought to give them their money back. And give them all our, and give them new books. You know what I do when I'm a wrestling coach? I develop young athletes. The parent comes to me and they give me a complaint. I get my checkbook out. They paid me $200 for the quarter. I give them the $200. And they think I'm kidding. No, leave your kid here. Leave your kid here. He's free. I'm not going to talk with the parent or anything. Hey, here's your money. And in 3 months, if you want to stay after that, then write me another check for the next session. This one's on me. I don't allow conflict in my business in that sense. Don't allow it. It's been real simple to say, hey, we made a mistake, fellowship. And we made a mistake. I trust you. See, I do trust groups. We made a mistake. Here's our accountability, our financial, and opening the books up to us and say, hey, we got problems here. How can we take care of it? Call Hazelton up and let him know we made a mistake. How much do we owe you? And we'll give you all new books and you'll get your money back for the books you bought. That never came as a solution. But that's how I operate in the business world. I'm highly regarded as one of the top wrestling coaches in the country when it comes to that area. I developed more state champions in Pennsylvania in a 10-year period than any other coach did. I put more kids in colleges, into West Point, Cornell, into Harvard, into University of Penn, Oklahoma State, Northwestern. I put more wrestlers into the university than any other coach did. People highly regard me, and the issue is trust. And that's the trust we should have here, right now. Trusting one another, loving one another, praying with one another. And making amends for our past, as we're taught in these programs. Why can't a service structure make amends? I'm concerned that we're still at the same divisional as that court case when Dave was drug in there. And I do have a testimony here. It's going to be put up on Radio Free soon, right? We're going to have it posted up there so you'll be able to go to Radio Free NA soon and be able to download it. You probably have to go on 4, right? They'll probably have to go on Radio Free 4, you're going to have to create another Radio Free 5.
On 1?
Okay, so you'll be able to go on Radio Free 1 in a few weeks and download the court case testimony so you have it. So do fact check me again. Because we're going to get it put up there, the testimony from that court case. And everyone was around back then, were in service. Did you get a letter of cease and desist? Anyone here got it? You didn't get one, Jeff. How'd you not get one? You got one. Well, put your hand up then when I ask you. Okay? I mean, seriously. Tom, how'd you feel when you got a letter from the World Service Office, cease and desist?
I was kind of proud.
Why were you proud, though?
Why was I proud?
Yeah.
Because I was doing something to help the Kingville Suffering Addict. I was pissed that they knew my first and last name and where I lived, though, this law firm. And I was also pissed they spent $15 to overnight it to me.
Right. So they spent $15 to overnight it to everybody. They gave our outside law firm addresses of our service workers, violate the MOU of each one of our service workers in Narcotics Anonymous that were involved that they had addresses on. And everyone they mass sent these things out, the cease and desist printing of this illicit, they called it illicit. Use the word there, illicit, basic text. You got an illicit book there, okay? That's what they called it. I want you to understand that now you're part of us. Okay? It's illegal, it's illicit, and they drug a man into court. I want to tell you about Grateful Dave. Grateful Dave wrote some stuff over there, The Power to Recover. I want to tell you about input and review and closed and open committee, participatory, which give input, and folks saved all that input and drug it from conference to conference, and everybody was respected, every piece. If it was one sentence on a napkin, they kept it. They valued it. Grateful Dave took Power to Recover. He had it all printed up, okay? Gave it to Rob Stone in a literature chair. They walked over to the garbage can and put it in the garbage can. And that's what they did with his input. They didn't value it like Bo and the World Literature Committee valued writing our book. They dumped it in the garbage can. And the Power to Recover was a step writing book that he was working on. What he had his sponsees using. I don't care if it was good or great or if it was bad. It was his input to the World Literature Committee. It had no right in the garbage can. Greg Piercy talked about here. You get some writings of his over there. You saw the precepts, the tenets, something spiritual instead of concepts dumped in the garbage can, thrown away. Never given to the fellowship, then put in review a beautiful piece. This is the process they used. They closed the committee structure down, as Jim was talking about. So in 1989, when we went back to the conference and wanted the third edition revised again, they would not even allow it on the floor of the conference. Big Lou from Miami and Grateful Dave Moorhead hopped on a plane and flew to Allentown with me. And they came to our Friday night meeting because our group was putting the yellow plain wrapper from 1988 to 1989, and we made a decision that if we did not get our book back, we're going to print. And Dave and Big Lou came into our conscience. We made a conscious decision to print the basic text at the group level. And Lou and Dave left our home group, went back to their groups, and made a conscious decision to print the book. And then we made a conscious decision back and forth on what cover we were going to use. And to put the original fourth and ninth back in. It was not originally put in. We put it in later through group conscience. We made a conscious decision to print this book. They made a conscious decision to come after a man and after every trusted servant and tell them to cease and desist. And then they pinpointed the person that couldn't afford a lawyer, that had the full-blown AIDS virus, didn't have a job, was living in people's homes, lived in my home 2 times for 6 months, would travel around the fellowship, try to inform the fellowship. It wasn't just the basic text, it was just her It was at Work Island High when they hired a writer for that one also. They gave us a little white one. We had to spend countless hours making the fellowship aware of this thing, or they would have even approved that thing. And I don't know about you, but you've been, I mean, I'm not running down the street with things chasing me. And that was in the little white one. And that was stopped at the Charlotte Quarterly. Bo was there when it got stopped. Bonnie was there, a few other people were there. And the book got stopped in its track. So there's a lot of things that led up to the court case. The actual court case, I mean, is anyone ever been in jail? Okay? Anyone not go to jail but went in front of a judge? All right? Most of us have been in front of a judge, right? Okay. You know, in the federal court, the judge sits real high, and then he sits down in the booth to testify. Anyone have an actual trial where they had to testify? And you sit up there. You ever have a judge get down out of his perch? He comes sit down on your perch and serve you water. That's what this judge did for us. His name was Judge Pollock. Just died this past year. This guy listened contemptuously to us. He listened to us. And he listened to the case. He listened to each testimony. The book was written not for a right for hire, but a labor of love instead. Bo testified to that behalf as the literature chair, that this basic text was written by addicts for addicts out of a labor of love. He talked about a guy selling blood. There was actually six of them that sold blood in Nebraska. That Jim got together and they went down so they could get stamps and get the things they needed so they could continue their work and to get that stuff mailed out to people. Six guys went down and sold their blood. You know, we used to do that in our addiction. You want to get high, you go to a blood clinic and get money.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're supposed to work, I don't know how many, you're supposed to wait a month or two or something like that, but you're there every week anyway at a different clinic. All right? I did that when I was in the Army. Just go sell my blood. Have to go to a different clinic. I was stationed in Baltimore. Find a different clinic to get money. Because I was an addict in the United States Army in 1970 to 72. So, you know, I knew how to get money. And we all do. But these guys went back and reverted to something that, yes, they did in their addiction, but it's for a positive thing. So we could get our stuff sent out, get the stamps we needed, get everything we needed. They did that because, like Paul said, they didn't have money. They didn't have money, but they got the money to do what we need to do to get this book out. So we got a whole series of stuff, and he testified to the behalf of this book being written from the heart, from the spirit. And Greg talked about, and I know there's some tapes out there of Greg, he talks about if we ever had a revision of our basic text, it would come from the Gray Book. So please go on that site and get the Gray Book and read it. Download it so you can have it. Get some people together and study it. Write. Why don't some of you just get the basic text with it, get Women 3rd Edition Revised off there, and get your Gray Book and start inputting it, and start getting a nice tablet, and start actually inputting and reviewing as a group, as revising the basic text. Start a revising process to actually get a real revision from that other book, from that great spiritual book. As Jim talked about three groups reading and how the newcomers get more out of it. In my home group, we study it every Friday night. We study that Gray Book. And you see the faces when they read it. We only do three pages at a night. That's all we read. It takes us over a whole year to get through a book. But it don't matter. It matters what's going on in that person's eyes tonight, today. It matters that you're touching spirits. That's what this stuff's about, touching spirits. And when I sat in that court case and I listened to Bo testify, he listened to George H. testify from the office. And you listened to the judge question him. You listened to Bo. You listened to Grateful Dave. My testimony's in there. You listened to this girl from Philadelphia testify. And they had a meeting in Philadelphia where they had 100 newcomers every time they opened the door up because they're being pumped in from one of them state-run rehabilitation centers that don't got money. So what they did is send the people to Narcotics Anonymous. Grateful Dave groups was handing out them books to them. And the judge asked George Hollihan, And I'll use his name because he was assistant manager of an office. When you become an employee, your name is known. George Hollihan from Miami-Dade was working for the office as the assistant manager when they sued Grateful Dave. When they sued that man, he was the one they sent there with the big high-priced lawyers from California and Philadelphia. They hired lawyers. And they spent over $100,000 of the fellowship's money pursuing this case against a member. Against a member. Against that member, and he had no attorney. Finally, an attorney volunteered who was in the fellowship to defend him. But in the meantime, in the beginning, through most of that case, the lawyer defended him in the contempt. During the regular case, Grateful Dave was defending himself, and I would sit up there with him and help him defend himself. And it was Grateful Dave questioning George. It was Grateful Dave questioning Bo. It was Grateful Dave questioning me. Grateful Dave questioning himself. And his other group member, the girl. Her name's in there. I don't have it on the tip of my tongue here, but her name is in there. And she, as she talked about these members, the judge looked at George and said, "Can you give this group the books they need to hand out?" And George's response was, "I got to call up the office and call up the board and see if the board will approve it." And the judge's response was, "Aren't you a nonprofit?" That's in testimony. Aren't you a nonprofit? Isn't that your responsibility to carry out this message? The message is in print. Isn't it our responsibility to make sure every addict has a book that walks through the door and there shouldn't be a price on it? That's what that case was about. It was about changes to the conference making decisions without fellowship approval and people just getting tired and tired of it and groups deciding they're going to take control of their own group, they're going to empower their group. That's what the case was about, empowering groups. Instead, we got multiple books that aren't written by us for us, because in that case, there's case issues in there, in that case. One is a labor of love, written by addicts for addicts, fiduciary trust. Fiduciary trust means you own it. You own the basic text, every one of you. You own that book. I want you to know that you own that basic text. The minute you walk through that door, you're part owner of that book. I don't care that the office says it's copyrighted to them. You own it. They're only entrusted with the copyright in the fiduciary trust manner with that book. And Mother Priest of Literature, Jim has posted up here, not a trust. They own it. He put a resume up there. It's a right for hire. A right for hire means I hire you to write for me. I own your property. A corporation that's supposed to be a service center that's set up for us has our name on it. They changed it. Used to be WSO Incorporated. Now it is NA. Whatever that means, NAS. Okay? Incorporated. Using our name. Selling our symbols. When did anyone go on Sears lately? The online stuff? Anyone been on Sears or Walmart?
Yep.
And you know what it says in there?
NA Jewelry.
NA Jewelry. They ask a piece of jewelry with your star in it. They sell the rights for people to use our symbol. But we don't have that right. We don't have the right for our own symbol without putting a registered trademark on it, but they can sell it to a company. If you hit the book on that, you hit the basic text on there, it does not come up as Knowles Incorporated, it comes up as Hazleton. Mm-hmm. Hazleton. So who really has our book? Did they sell the right to our book, them to be the printing and the distributor of our basic text now? For the outside world? It's going through Hazleton. And that you hit, and you can hit every piece of jewelry in there, it's going to tell you what corporation owns it. It's going to tell you that in that site. Is that within our traditions? Think about that. But that's what this court case was about. The court case was about your ownership. You own the basic text. You own the original IPs that Jim's saying, hey, go on that site and download them. They're yours. We put it out there for you. You can have it. It's your literature. That old literature is all yours. You own it. Every bit of it. We love it. You own it. And you're going to continue to own it as long as I'm alive. And I'm telling you that. I'm telling you, if you decide you want to use this literature, if someone comes after you, call me up and I'll be there to help you. I will be in that court case if they decide to sue you. I will be there to help you. I will not allow it. I feel that strong about our literature. I feel that you should be able to write today, and that's what I'm telling you. Take that grade book, pick your basic text, and start a real revision and share it with us so we can get a literature movement going again. If you don't think sponsorship is good enough, let's start writing a real sponsorship booklet. How's your sponsorship chain work? How's this sponsorship? How do you interact with this? It talks about, you listen to Greg's tapes, he talks about getting in relationships when you get clean. Relationship with yourself, your God, your sponsor, principles, traditions. Talks about a few relationships, developing them in this program. He doesn't tell you to stay out of relationships, get in them. But he tells you which ones to get into. Start writing about how you develop them relationships together in this program. How are you working, and you get a sponsor, how are you and that sponsor working back and forth together? So you can share that with somebody else. That's what this is about here, sharing it. Continuously getting that message out there to other people. Carrying that message in your home groups. Don't get caught up with the corporate world directing you. Stand on your own two feet and be part of something greater than us. Greater than us is participation together. I didn't end up in Miami in 1981 because I wanted to be here. My sponsor told me to come. My sponsor was involved in writing of literature, and his name is Joe Proctor from Memphis, Tennessee, that Bo was talking about. He told me where I had to go when he met me. Met me at the second East Coast, gave me a gray book and a four-step inventory guide, and told me to work the steps or die, motherfucker. All right? And then he told me that I had to go to the next NA function there was. There was two NA functions back then that were on the East Coast. At that point, the World Convention was on the East Coast, which was in Miami. And the second East Coast was in Trenton State University. So I went there. And the other function was literature, get involved in literature. And I'm saying it was a function because you got involved in writing. They encouraged you. Your home groups were encouraged to write and send input in. Our home group sent input in. We went and participated down in the Fed writing meeting in Bucks County on Sundays and helped send input into the basic text. My home group sent money in, which I didn't realize because I was pretty numb in the beginning. But our group conscience to send money and donate. Doesn't matter how much, but they sent some money in for our book to be written. They included us. They made us feel like we're part of something. The court case made us feel like we're not part of it. It separates our fellowship. It's separation. We should be looking for what's inclusive. We should be looking for what's inclusive to help another addict recover from the disease of addiction. That's what's important. And that court case is so valuable for you to look at and study as you go through what you got to go through in the next few years here with what they're giving you from the corporate world again. And you can't sit by idly and say, it doesn't bother my home group no more. Because they want to change the philosophy of total abstinence. The world has changed the philosophy. I was warned of this a few years back by my one doctor friend who's an addictionologist. They told me, this is coming down the pike. I want you to understand the medical field and what we're doing. He said, think of it like this. You remember the broken leg? What do? They cast it. An addict goes in, they want to put a cast on an addict today. And their cast is drugs. Their cast is drugs. And your fellowship's going to have to deal with it. Another doctor friend that I just sent my young sponsee to for therapy, physical therapy, does not believe in medication. And he told me, simple, Bill, your fellowship has to keep total abstinence because you're the last hope. He said, the rest of the medical field already changed, the rehabilitation field has changed, and you are the last hope of a fellowship that has total abstinence as its way of life. He said, don't change it. I'm getting that from doctors. Warning us, telling me don't change it, why it's happening behind your backs. When the board of directors is negotiating with Hazleton Corporate, negotiating with governmental agencies. Anybody been a drug coordinator? You hear of them? I didn't think we had them where I live, okay? Seriously, I didn't think I had them, but my one sponsee come in the program and he got me all these old issues. So yeah, I said, I'll go to court with you. I didn't realize they had a drug court there. I'm sitting there, the first thing I do, I walk in the court, they want to take my walking stick, first of all. Then I get old behavior, I want to react, take a step at the security or whatever they want to call themselves, sheriffs. They tell me to get out of their space, and I tell them, hey, I'm not in your space, you're in mine. I mean, I still revert. I mean, I'm like, hold it, what the hell am I doing here? I'm going to be in trial here today yet. And then I said, well, here's how it's going to work, Sergeant. I'm going to walk there and fall down your stairwell. I'm going to sue you. Or you can keep my walking stick, and you're going to wheelchair me to the court. So he wheelchaired me, and I'm going to, hey, I'll let this guy do some work. So then I'm sitting there. I get in the front pew. Everybody, newcomers, get in the front seat. So I sit in the front seat, and then I see a sergeant come back in and talk to the other officer. And my poor kid had to sit all day. He got drug court number one morning, then he got court in the afternoon. So he got to sit all morning waiting. They didn't call his name. So he's stuck there. Then we got to come back at 1 o'clock, and he's sitting all day again. And I put a lollipop in my mouth, so the guard tells me I got to get the lollipop out. So I bite it off and give him the stick. I mean, I got a little rebellion in me yet, okay? Got a little criminal mind in me. And then I'm thinking about, what will you do here? And I'm looking at, here's an idiotic mind. Let me sit there long enough, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm saying, how are you going to escape this place? I got to get out of here. So I'm looking at the guard and I'm thinking, I can go up and put him in a sleeper hold, take his gun, shoot the other two guards. What's my head doing? What are they going to do if you tell a psychiatrist that? Seriously. We understand that here, don't we? And that's how my mind operates. It's fleeting thoughts. But I call my sponsor up and talk with my sponsor, talk with other recovering addicts in the room. That's what I do. I don't go tell people about what my mind thinks. But that's what I'm sitting through this drug court. And I'm listening to them. Here's the first thing the judge says. I don't know if any of you ever heard this in a court of law, but I didn't realize it was in drug court. He says, everybody today, we're going to make a deal and no one's going to jail. Now, are we watching a TV show? Let's make a deal. Now, listen to this shit. He says, and if you don't have an attorney, not to negotiate it, come up here and negotiate your own deal because you're not going to jail today. But I can guarantee you, if it ain't day today, you're going to jail tomorrow. He said, because once you leave this courtroom, you're going to jail. He said, so get it done right now. And I'm listening, what the hell are we at? Are we in a different nation? What's going on here? And then they start. Every person with drug issues. Everybody gets put on 4 years probation. Everybody walks out there with anywhere from $8,000 to $50,000 court costs and fines. And then the parole agent's waiting for them as they walk out the door. And they take them and process them and tell them how much they're paying every month. And then they got to do the urine tests. And then, where they got to go to meetings or who if they haven't been through treatment, what treatment facility they're going to. So it's already connected with the treatment facilities. The whole day is. And the service is looking at that right now. I got a letter at home. I got to get through a couple more boxes, but I know it's there. It's a letter from a guy from Missouri named John F. wrote the President of the United States a letter. I want to know if United States government directly funds Narcotics Anonymous. So you think they just send a letter back and say we don't fund Narcotics Anonymous. The letter is, we do not directly fund them. But then the Western Unity Conference, guess who did their, you ever go to a, you have that thing down here to go over the agenda reports and stuff? Do service teaching, right? Who's doing it? Addicts, right? Out there, they have judges doing theirs. Judges coming in. Professionals coming in and doing their conference for them. Telling them how you're going to interact with the court system. And in a conference. So there is an affiliation with the United States government and this stuff already. With the court systems. And we got to bring them in and they got to teach us how we're going to interact with them. We've crossed them lines. We crossed the line. You're going to have total absence except. Think about them things because this court case its magnitude that we can keep our fellowship and keep it clean from that. We can create our own services. We can separate that thing from us. And we can start creating our own literature, and we can start inputting and reviewing and writing literature again. Because we know how to do them things. This court did set precedent that a right for hire is their ownership. But, however, we can write literature in the fiduciary trust. We can set a fiduciary trust company up that only deals with fiduciary trust and protection of our copyrights. We can create literature that can be given away freely by our groups. We don't have to send another penny on. And I don't mean another penny. I'm talking about you don't have to buy literature there no more. Download it and print it what you need. Write what you need, as they told us with the basic text. Write the book. So if there's something you think we need, let's write it together. Let's participate. Let's be unified together. And let's carry this message. And what is our message? A message of hope and promise of freedom from what? Act of addiction. Let's make this guy feel like he's the most important person in the room here tonight. The other girl left, and we make her feel it too with him. But let's make sure when before he leaves that everyone hugs this man. Everybody hugs that man over there. And make sure they get phone numbers. But first of all, make sure you get their phone number. Make sure he's going to a meeting today. Make sure on the next day you're calling him up and getting him to another meeting. Make sure you protect him, that he has that book now, that no one harasses him for having it. Study it with him. Encourage him. And love him. That's what we're here for. If there's any questions, tell me. I'm here to answer them, too. I'm an addict. My name's Bill.